All right, thank you for that introduction. Today I'm going to be talking to you guys about some of my master's research from the University of Wisconsin, which I conducted with Drs. Douglas Soldat and Alfred Hardemink. So all of my master's research was focused on two-tiered sand-based putting green soil profiles. So the idea behind this profile design is that with a sand-based root zone, this profile will drain very quickly after a large precipitation event, yet that two-tiered profile design with sand over gravel will allow this root zone to hold water more evenly and for longer time periods between precipitation events. So the result of that textural discontinuity with fine pores over larger pores, it results in a zone where water is preferentially retained in the root zone. And so what we see is that this area just above the gravel layer tends to stay persistently wet. So the specific focus of my talk today is going to be on a layering issue that we have documented in these two-tiered putting green profiles. More specifically, we're going to talk about how iron oxide can form layers right at the interface between sand and gravel, so as indicated by that red line. So to give you a little bit of a better idea of what I'm talking about, here are a couple pictures, one from Hawaii, one from Madison, Wisconsin, of these iron cemented layers. So what we see with these layers is that they're reddish in color, they're friable, they make an audible snap sound when you break them. They're relatively impermeable to water, so the result is decreased hydraulic conductivity in these profiles. And then that will lead eventually to anaerobic conditions in the root zone from persistently saturated conditions. And then ultimately we see decreased turf density at the surface where these layers are occurring. So many of you may have never heard of this before because there are currently no published accounts of this happening in turf grass soils. But the issues caused by this can be so severe that the infiltration issues that some golf courses we've worked with have chosen to renovate their entire putting green complex after despite being only 10 years old. So these issues can be, you know, very devastating. So when we do look through the scientific literature, we find a similar issue in natural soils. It's called the plaquic horizon. This is a dark reddish pan layer between 1 and 25 millimeters in thickness. These layers are cemented by iron or iron and manganese, and they also feature accumulations of organic matter. Now these layers, these plaquic horizons, form at textural and or pH boundaries. So what we see in this picture is there's a reddish cemented layer that is formed between the interface of an anoxic or oxygen-depleted soil that is directly layered above an oxic or an oxygen-rich soil. So these conditions sound kind of similar to what we're seeing in those pictures and what we see on golf courses, but with no published accounts of this, we don't have much of an idea. So that was kind of the rationale for this study. So our research objectives specifically were to characterize the physical and chemical properties of these iron cemented layers in putting greens. We wanted to develop a conceptual model to describe how these layers form in our putting greens. And finally, we wanted to provide a foundation of knowledge for future prevention and remediation strategies. So over the past several years, we've been keeping a running list of sites where we have anecdotal accounts of these layers occurring on the golf course. So this map shows those sites. There are 24 on this map, and that about once a month we could probably add a site to that. So we're continuing to find more and more sites. What you'll notice on this is that the sites where these layers do not appear to be restricted to any one geographic or climatic region. They appear to occur across a broad range of climatic conditions or geographic locations. You'll also notice a void in the western United States, but that's just because we haven't sampled there. So by no means is this a random sample. These are just accounts that we have come across. We're adding them to this map, and the only point here is to show that it can occur in arid regions as well as humid regions. So for this study, we chose six of these sites to look at the soil profiles in greater detail. So we chose these sites to represent a range of mean annual precipitation, root zone age, and soil chemical conditions. Now, for the purposes of today's talk, I'm going to just focus on two of these sites, one in New Jersey and one in Hawaii. So what we did at the putting greens of these sites is we purposely selected locations where we thought that these layers would be the most severe. So we wanted to get profile samples that featured these layers in their strongest condition. So we collected these samples in PVC pipes of the full profile down to the gravel layer. We cut the pipes open vertically, and we described the soil horizons that we saw using soil taxonomy from a pedologist's perspective. From each horizon that we distinguished, we measured the total iron oxide content with a citrate dithionite extraction, and we calculated the soil organic carbon as the difference between total carbon and inorganic carbon. And we did both total iron oxide and organic carbon measurements in triplicate so that we could look at some of the variability. And then finally, we measured the soil pH and water for each horizon. So right into the data here, this is the Hawaii site, and the picture on the left is just a view looking down at the sand and gravel interface, and you can see just the edge of that reddish cemented layer that's just forming it's forming a cemented layer right above the gravel layer. So the soil profile had an A1 and A2 horizon that were very dark in color. They had a strong sulfurous odor, suggesting that the conditions may have been anaerobic and there may have been some black layer in this profile. The C1 horizon was lighter in color, but as we go into the C2, C3, and C4 horizons, we see this very dark gray color of the profile that suggests that we may have had reducing or anaerobic conditions. Finally, at the interface of sand and gravel, we did have a BSM horizon, or a horizon that's cemented by iron oxide minerals. So this graph shows the total iron oxide content by depth in the soil profile. So on the y-axis, zero is the soil surface, and as we go down, we are approaching the gravel interface. So we saw that soil iron content was relatively consistent from the surface down to that very bottom depth, or the second from the bottom, but at the sand and gravel interface, the BSM horizon, we saw significantly more iron that had accumulated at that depth. Soil organic carbon, as we expected, was greater at the surface, and then it dropped off to low levels in the C horizons. But when you look at the C4 horizon and the BSM horizon, we see a slight uptick in the organic carbon content. So this is suggesting that we might have, in addition to iron being a part of these layers, we might also have organic carbon that's part of this system. The soil pH was very intriguing at this site. In the A horizons towards the surface, the pH was around 8.5. As we decreased to just above that iron cemented layer, the pH dropped to 5.2. So we see this strong gradient in soil pH, and then it returns to about 7.5 right in that cemented layer. So we think that this pH drop could be attributed to acidification processes that are associated with iron oxidation. In some cases, sulfuric acid can be produced as a byproduct of iron oxidation if sulfur is present. So that's a very interesting finding. So the New Jersey site was similar to the Hawaii site in that we had an iron cemented layer at the sand gravel interface, but we also had a second iron cemented layer at about a 10 centimeter depth, the BSM1 on the picture. Here's a close-up of that upper iron cemented layer. You see that thin, strong band of red. So in this profile, the total iron oxide content by depth showed us that we had significantly more iron in both the BSM1 horizon and the BSM2 horizon. Soil organic carbon, again, as we expect, was greater at the surface and decreased into that C horizon. And then in the BSM2 horizon at the sand and gravel interface, we had another increase in organic carbon. So again, further evidence that organic carbon may be part of this cementing process in these layers. And a possible explanation for that BSM1 horizon at a 10 centimeter depth, just looking at the organic carbon content, we see a drop off from the BSM1 horizon to the C1 horizon. There's a big difference in organic matter content. It's possible that we have an organic rich surface layer where water is being preferentially retained, and then that C1 horizon below, being lower in organic matter, may be more prone to drying out more quickly. So we might have similar to the sand gravel interface, we might have this organic over sand interface that is creating this boundary where water is retained. We have a layer forming there too. The soil pH in this profile was close to 7 at the surface and then ranged between 6 and 6.5. So this one did not have that strong production of acidity like we saw on the Hawaii site. So just now zooming out to all 6 sites that we looked at, in these sites, we documented 3 distinct pH scenarios. Scenario A was the most typical, where pH was acidic throughout the entire depth of the profile. Scenario B, we observed at 2 of the sites, which is where we had a strong decrease in pH with depth. And that could be attributed to sulfur and iron chemistry producing acidity. And then finally, scenario C, we observed at one site where they were using a calcareous gravel layer, a calcareous source of their gravel, and the pH was acidic in the root zone, but became very alkaline in the gravel layer. So with this, we hope we've built a baseline of information that we can start to interpret soil iron content. So this is just an example of sites without layers compared to sites with layers. We have a greater mean iron content for sites with layers compared to these sites without layers that we looked at in a different study. So we need more sites to really be able to interpret these, but we hope that we've started this process. So finally, we've created a model that we think can explain this layer formation. We have a sand root zone over a gravel drainage layer, and the first step that we propose is that iron 3, which is contained in sand minerals, can be reduced to iron 2, which is soluble. That soluble iron can then be translocated vertically in the profile, and we can also have soluble iron 2 added through fertilizer. This soluble iron is moved down to the sand and gravel interface, where water is preferentially retained, and then in the presence of oxygen below, we have oxidation of that iron back to an iron 3 form. So to summarize these findings, this is the first description of this layer in turf systems. This layer occurs across a broad range of geography and climate, and we think that the factors of formation include an adequate supply of iron, the downward movement of water, and some kind of textural or pH boundary. But the next steps are to try to put some numbers on this. We need to quantify the impacts of fertilizer, irrigation, root zone chemistry, because right now we just have a really conceptual view of it. We really need to put some more quantitative numbers on this. Golf course superintendents really want to know how can we remove these layers once they've already formed. In this picture, people are drilling with hand drills down to try to break up that layer. But if we don't understand how the layer even formed in the first place, any kind of practice like this is just going to be a temporary fix, and the layer will most likely form again unless we can understand it better. And finally, we want to prevent these layers from forming in future constructions of two-tiered putting greens. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge all of these people, and I would be happy to take any questions.
We have time for questions.
Go ahead. The question was, do we find any similarity in management practices among these courses? That was something that we looked into. So we asked them about their iron fertilization rates. That was a big question we had. With this limited number of sites, though, we didn't see any clear trend. Another thing we discovered is that for a nutrient like iron, people don't think of it the same as nitrogen, phosphorus, or potassium. In a lot of cases, people don't know how much iron they've applied, like the way they would know how much nitrogen they've applied. And a lot of products might have iron as kind of a minor nutrient in the products, but they're not applying it for iron, they're applying it for something else. So we found that just by surveying the superintendents, it wasn't carefully controlled enough for us to find any differences. So that's where my future research comes in, is really trying to tease that apart. Yes? The question was, we described the chemical process, but what is leading to the physical layer, I suppose?
Yeah, the cementing and the actual cementing,
As iron oxidizes, it's forming some kind of crystalline or very weakly crystalline mineral. So what we have is that we have a mineral that's forming. So we tried to look into this. The weakest iron oxide mineral that you would be able to pick up with any kind of X-ray diffraction would be ferry hydrate. This appears to be weaker than ferry hydrate, so we haven't been able to pick that up yet. But you're forming a mineral at that interface, so there's some crystalline structure to that mineral, and that's what's giving it its friability. Let's get one from back there. Question was, landscapers often use a tiered system like this for drainage as well. Do we see this in their systems? My first answer would be, no, I haven't specifically seen it in a landscaper setting, but we have seen this or heard of this occurring in baseball pitches that use a sand over gravel type of system. We've even heard of it occurring in bunkers where you have sand over a gravel drain tile, but it doesn't happen everywhere, and this doesn't happen on every golf course, so we really need to tease out those differences. Why doesn't that happen everywhere? Yes? Sorry, could you say that again? Have we thought about characterizing the gravel? Yes, that's something we initially set out to look into. We looked at that Hawaii site. We looked at that today. We took some scanning electron micrographs of that layer, and it's really a qualitative analysis. It's not quantitative, but that SEM photograph didn't show evidence of mineral weathering or redox processes on the surface of gravel. So that led us to think that it's more likely to do with the sand root zone chemistry, things that are happening from above. But we can't rule that out. We need to consider the gravel source.
All right, one last question.
Sorry. Question was, did any of the courses we looked at have a choker layer in the greens construction? So we actually, I presented six sites, two of the six sites in this study, but we looked at the profiles of over 30 sites, and in some of these sites with a choker layer, some sites had this type of layering issue and some didn't. Long story short, we just need to look at more sites before I can make any conclusions.
All right, thank you. Yep. Good job.
Thank you.